Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Scales of Truth. You know, it's not that I'm way smart. It totally isn't. It's more like I can see patterns, and then because I can see patterns, I bravely apply them and consistently apply what I know about patterns, I can call bullshit early on something. So that's what we're doing. This is about the Tylenol and autism link further development, where actually the company knew, the very company that's all about theirs, acted like RFK Jr. didn't had his head up his ass, and of course he did because he's next to Trump, and so on and so forth, absolutely had evidence of this link as it was studied even 7 years ago. So that's what we're going to talk about here. And I'm telling you, it's like the patterns just become like, I've seen this movie before. It's not even a movie. I've seen this scene before. It's like, I've read this very small book before. This is very easy to understand. So what happened is a Daily Caller News Foundation, you can find the Daily Caller article, found documents, and it seems like they're probably sitting on this, just a great time to say it. Like, I feel like they probably had already started this research, and then they're like, shoot, this is a great time to drop it. So we're going to go over that article and the various scientific journals behind it. It's pretty devastating. But before I do that, I want to say that we are in a better climate for truth right now. Specifically this truth. Calling bullshit when somebody denies an accusation from somebody who's looking into further details and nuances of some scientific aspect. So we are now, thank you RFK Jr., thank you Americans who've got that extra privilege to speak up because you see the letter of the law, the First Amendment, and other folks who just speak up. We are in a better time to say, I know you denied it, and I also think you're full of shit, and I'm going to follow up, and I'm going to say it. So in 2020, 2021, not as many people said it, or they didn't get as much outlook. Again, Elon Musk saved the planet. You can like him or not now, but individual acts are worthy of praise, and that's one of them. So we are now to where we are more likely to say, yeah, I hear your denial, and your denial is, quote, scientific. But I also know there are PR professionals, and the PR professional's job is not to spout science. The PR professional's job is to put spin all the way up to and including, depending on the culture, lying on behalf of the company. Plain and simple, this is not difficult to figure out. And so we understand that. And so when your talking heads come out or your PR firm comes out or you have a press release and the news just echoes the press release, we're not going to go, well, that must be it then. I mean, since their legal department said it's not true, and since their press release said it's not true, and since their CEO said it's not true, well, it must not be true. But we're better, and we have to keep going with this. So, as to this article, it is called Scoop. Tylenol maker privately admitted evidence was getting heavy, quote-unquote. Heavy, quote-unquote. Didn't say that right. Was getting, quote, heavy, end quote, for autism risk in 2018. So let me start again on that, okay? Scoop, Tylenol maker privately admitted evidence was getting heavy for autism risk in 2018. This was dated today, 9/26/25. Actually, I might post this tomorrow, so maybe it's yesterday. As I've already put up a podcast today. Emily Kopp, investigative reporter. All right, so I'm going to try not to read this, just read. I'm going to highlight some areas because I don't want to just read the article. And then, you know, maybe read some of the quotes. But here and there, I'm just going to have to read from it. So, yeah, the Daily Caller News Foundation basically found these documents or cooperated with documents from a law firm that filed a class action. And so that's how they have the documents. Like I said, I feel like this didn't happen in 2 days. So they were probably already on it and, you know, feeling like they were more brazen because RFK Jr. did bring up old science. And I think that's great about this is that this is a perfect example of what the bully pulpit of an administration can do if they treat it right. And they did it right. He didn't just say it. He came out there with President Trump and then he talked about it. This is excellent. This is outstanding. It's what the bully pulpit is supposed to be. So the 2018 quote, this is not from just some dude who decided to whistle blow because he saw an email and he's, just some average guy. This is specialty knowledge expert, U.S. Director of Epidemiology for Janssen, the pharmaceutical arm of Johnson & Johnson. Rachel Weinstein says, the weight of the evidence is starting to feel heavy on me. Now, they spun their company off into a company called Kenvue, K-E-N-V-U-E, sometime in this time period. And so that's why the lawsuit was against Kenvue. The law firm is Keller Postman, LLC, and they filed that in the Federal District Court for the Southern District of New York. And then the article goes on to say that, 10 years before that, Johnson & Johnson had already been getting queries from consumers and physicians about a possible link. Here's medical safety lead Andre Mann, J&J Office of Consumer. I'm sorry, J&J Office of Consumer Medical Safety lead Andre Mann, A-N-D-R-E-M-A-N-N, 2008, regarding receiving a letter from a physician with concerns. Quote, not much choice but to consider this a safety signal that needs to be evaluated. Now we have a Leslie Schurer in 2012, the head of the division of Johnson & Johnson that monitors the side effects of drugs already on the market. Leslie, L-E-S-L-I-E-S-H-U-R. So I do want to say I've been involved with discovery in class actions. And when you have that discovery, and it's a big pharmaceutical or medical device type company, you will see these types of things. And so you can go, but how much did it really hit the leadership and the conscience of the company? Well, I would say this is quite a bit. But when you just see them flying through, they are supposed to keep track of these types of things that are happening out in the world. Hey, there's a study. And they can then choose to ignore it or not. And when they do ignore it, does that make them not culpable? Not really. It doesn't make them not culpable. But these things do fly across the desks and the emails of, certain monitoring, teams in these types of companies. And so it's a matter then of how much they lollygag. Like the mere existence of an email that says, hey, a physician is concerned, does not by itself just absolutely, a smoking gun any company. But it's a matter of how often and the background and what they do with it. And then specifically later on, if they deny any knowledge. And that's where we are. So any given thing is kind of that one straw on the camel's back. But yeah, Leslie Schurer received an alert in 2012 about the concerns about acetaminophen and autism from a concerned father. Well, the reason that father had sent that is because there was some science behind it already. And so she says, and all this is showing awareness of the head of the division that monitors side effects. In case this goes to press. So it's basically, monitoring the internet and or monitoring input and inboxes, or calls or the like. So then the article says that, it seemed to reach the C-suite by 2014, according to another email. Now, I guess that means executive suite, like CEO. I'm not used to that term. But the link between Tylenol and neurological disorders. And this email, which I downloaded the PDF, so I'm not sure I'm going to open up every PDF. My phone's a little funny about that. But that references Johnson & Johnson CEO Alex Gorsky at the time. And so it goes on to say, as I've said, they've been following over a period of time quite a drumbeat of scientific publications that we're finding an association between the drug being taken in pregnancy and infancy and autism risk. There's a 2018 internal presentation that where the company acknowledges, as they looked at these observational studies, a somewhat consistent, quote, end quote, association between prenatal exposure and neurodevelopmental disorders. So that's 2018. And then another slide on the same show shows that acknowledges that larger meta-analyses, reviews that are summarizing multiple scientific studies, found an association. But note the weakness of these studies, like confounding variables and subjectivity in measuring autistic traits. Those folks were not available for comment and or did not comment. So then we have a spokesperson. This is presumed recently. Now, it may not be, because this was their answer to DCNF, which DCNF may have asked them that a little while ago, because I'm not sure when they decided to, you know, go to press with this story. Because like I said, I feel like they probably had this story already and were just deciding when to drop it. Seemed like a great time to drop it. And so this spokesperson says a couple of generic things. This is the one I have more of a problem. One of them's a little bit problematic, where they just say, oh, like, we as an entity continue to believe there's no causal link. Okay, that's iffy, you know. I don't know that that's really true, given that one person said, this is starting to weigh heavy on my heart. But this part's a total lie, okay? And I'm going to pull out a certain link, so a certain aspect of it. So again, this is Kenview spokesperson. And again, this was spun off into Kenview. No longer does Tylenol company, whatever that is, have the direct liability and responsibility for Tylenol, which is, of course, interesting. But they say acetaminophen is the safest pain reliever option for pregnant women as needed throughout their entire pregnancy. I want to bring up a couple things. No. And they say our products are safe and effective when used as directed on the product label. No, because your current ones don't say to take them less often. And you have studies that say take them less often when you're pregnant. Don't take it as much when they're pregnant. And remember, the other day I said, hey, there's liver toxicity. Just go look at the labels. So if you have liver toxicity, then that's a toxic product. And so you should be taking it a little, not every day. Anybody who's taking this every day is going to be susceptible to toxicity. So why would this not make sense that also then, if it's toxic to you, it's toxic to your developing child if taken too often? So the other thing I want to point out about this quote, acetaminophen is the safest pain reliever option for pregnant women as needed throughout their entire pregnancy. I forget if the other captures I've got are about this, but they're like, yeah, but there are, what other options are there? It's like, bro, you're talking about pain relief versus the development of a child and whether or not they developed well and whether or not they're going to have an ongoing condition throughout their life, like a mental disorder. How are you rationalizing when on one side is just like, are you in kind of pain right now? And on the other side is a lifetime effect. Not only just a lifetime effect, like whether or not this child will be independent or not, or whether the parents will have to take care of them throughout their lives with massive medical bills. So in the class action suit that was brought in the Court of Appeals, well, rather, hearings before the Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit in the class action lawsuit, well, actually, they'll begin pretty soon. Wow! Well, hold on. Hearings before the Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit in the class action suit against Kenview will begin October 9th. However, in September 2023, Judge Denise Coate granted summary judgment after tossing scientific testimony. And the scientific testimony that she tossed was the medical and scientific experts. Isn't that crazy? citing the great public health implications of pregnant women not having the drug. Bro, the whole point is whether or not it's safe. And so you're already talking about the public health implications. That's the point, you daft wench. Now, some of this stuff that I'm citing and talking about, I did take some, grabs separately. We might do it at the end of the podcast, after we go through the article generally. I just decide if I'm going to. So the lead attorney says, yeah, so the judge overstepped. We saw, quote, we saw this nonsense with COVID on all sorts of things that turned out to be untrue. Well, there's great implications. If you take away this, it's like you're being circular. The point is whether it's safe. The whole idea of its broad implications on health are why it's most relevant. So she goes, we saw this nonsense with COVID on all sorts of things that turned out to be untrue. They said these lies were noble lies. That's exactly COVID. Well, I mean, they don't need to see the expert testimony on whether this widely used medication is dangerous, because that would have great implications on whether or not they have the thing available to them. Okay. So I like the way she said this. These lies were noble lies. They said the lies were noble lies. Well, we shouldn't noble lies. Well, we shouldn't sugarcoat things for pregnant moms. And as to the idea of the internal records, this is supposed to be, you know, so you don't decide summary judgment against the plaintiffs, right? It's like, well, and they knew, which is part of it, right? It's like part of like negligence or whatever they're trying to find here. And it wasn't that. It's actually stated in the article what it was they're trying to get to. It wasn't negligence, but it was something along those lines. Like they had some duty to inform in a more clear way. And it says that the company knew about the studies. The judge said, hey, the fact that they knew about the studies shows candid internal discussion, which is a positive corporate behavior. Well, no shit, but that's not the argument here, dumbass. Wow. So, yeah, and then, well, that's just about the current Tylenol website, so I'm not going to talk about that. However, I do want to talk about the bait and switch from one paragraph to another in the same general area, and because I'm smart enough to see these baits and switches. I want you to see these fine terminology distinctions and maybe pause for a second after I tell you to, and say, what is Tyson about to say? Because Tyson's sharp about this stuff. So this is just what Kenview states on the website for Tylenol. But I want you to listen, this first quote and then the next. See if you can figure it out. The first one. Credible, independent scientific data continues to show no proven link between taking acetaminophen and autism. Between taking acetaminophen and autism. Second one, if you're treating your little one with acetaminophen, please know that there is no credible science that shows taking acetaminophen causes autism. Okay, so A, credible science. Do you understand the distinction to put that there? You're telling somebody to ignore a journal article. People don't put in journal articles off of a whim, asshole. So that is a rhetorical mechanism to make you dismiss science. There's no credible science. Because they said there's no science, immediately go, what do you mean? There's fucking journal article A through Z, right? But the other thing I was going to point out, if you are treating your little ones with acetaminophen, so the second thing is, so I'm going to read it again. I'll pause like I said I was going to. First, credible, independent scientific data continues to show no proven link between taking acetaminophen and autism. Second paragraph, second quote. If you are treating your little one with acetaminophen, please know that there is no credible science that shows taking acetaminophen causes autism. Okay, now how did they limit theirself? And I just gave you part of it. Go ahead and pause for just a moment. And we're back. Thank you for thinking if you paused and thought. Well, the second quote. That was only half the argument. Only half the argument or less was about your little one taking acetaminophen. If you are treating your little one with acetaminophen, please know that there is no credible science that shows taking acetaminophen causes autism. So note how they took out half the argument. More of the argument is about pregnant mothers taking acetaminophen. So that's the rhetorical bait and switch there. So we have a 2018 literature review I'm probably going to at least show the title of later on. Just remember 2018, where employees are discussing, emails show that the employees were discussing a 2018 literature review, which is then linked in this article, that concluded that pregnant women should be cautioned against indiscriminate use of Tylenol. Okay, well, that's a literature review that's posted in scientific journals. And a 2016 study. Now we're past merely 7 years ago. Now we're to 9 years ago. That concluded that prenatal exposure to acetaminophen was associated with autism with hyperkinetic features, quote unquote, or abnormal involuntary movement. So those are two different studies. We'll at least talk and mention those high level. And the important thing here is that back then, employees of Johnson & Johnson were discussing it. In fact, Weinstein, the first quote we had, and I'm not sure if it's about, I think it's probably about one of those two studies, but I'm not sure which one, or if it's a third study, because I just grabbed screenshots, wrote to one of the authors, lauding the substantial strengths of the study design. The strengths and robustness of the association and the judges and the study's ability, quote, to control for possible confounding by indication that, quote, lends support to the findings. Weinstein joined Kenview from Johnson & Johnson, but has since retired, or LinkedIn shows. So this is the same person who ended up saying, it feels heavy. It's starting to feel heavy. In 2018, when confronted, when they were considering the follow-up studies about the drug's autism risk, they were considering doing following-up studies, funding them, decided not to. They want to stick their necks out, after all. And Weinstein mentioned that they could end up confirming the findings. And this is where they say, oh, and also, like, why would the options be if they didn't have Tylenol? Bro, a lot of different ways to have pain relief. And you're acting as though the balance on one side is pain during pregnancy, and it would outweigh a lifetime of mental deficiency and a lifetime of parental support and that burden and a lifetime of much more expensive care. Fucking assholes. They also said, yeah, they knew it enough. So this goes to, well, did it just kind of fly by their desk by like many things? Or did it get more the corporate entity's attention? And this goes to that. They conducted research described as social listening about tracking Google searches and social media posts seeking evidence about Tylenol and autism. January 2020 through October 2023. In the article, you can see the thing that's kind of a little spike graph, like kind of a volume or traffic graph, you know, with the bottom just being over period time and the vertical being how much. They initiated social media trends research after also then, because this would be separate, because it started later, after the 2021 publication of a call to action on Tylenol in Nature Reviews Endocrinology by 13 U.S. and European experts. And so I will cover that, I've decided. So we'll mention that. That's, again, is the Nature Reviews Endocrinology call to action. A 2023 internal review dubbed Project Cocoon. I did save that PDF, but I don't think I'm going to go to it. There's a link there. Acknowledged that the question touches every aspect of the brand. 2 years before, and now I don't have my exact context because I just grabbed this. So just know something happened in 2015. And two years before that, in 2013, a ProPublica investigation had uncovered also that the company was slow to update its label regarding the risk of overdose. Well, the reason I'm mentioning that, and that's going to be around the idea of that liver. We talked about it in the other episode, liver and kidney toxicity. And this says here, Tylenol caused 1,500 overdose deaths from 2001 through 2010, more than every other over-the-counter painkiller combined, according to the report. So this would be the ProPublica investigation, 2013. And all that says is like, man, you've had a parallel before where you didn't act responsibly. You know, so you've been kind of like highlighted and informed. So you're going to act irresponsibly again? And the answer is yes. Yes, they were. Now, regarding that class action suit, when I said, it wasn't exactly, well, it was negligence. I just have more of a nuance. Whether the company was negligent in ignoring a credible connection. Now, this is interesting because one of the articles, the studies that we will mention is by, I believe it was co-authored or authored by William Parker. He's a CEO of a WP Lab Inc. and a neuroscientist formerly associated with Duke. The hypothesis in first 2008, this connection, with strong animal model studies showing its toxicity by 2014. Another thing, and this is, I mentioned this earlier, but I don't think I did. I've tried to do this episode a few times, and my cat has meowed too loud. Then I go outside, and someone's mowing the lawn. So when you hear me with white noise outside, I've got a very vocal cat, and you kind of know the reason I'm able to do more podcasts. I decided not to, like, and it's studio time, close the door, and do a bunch of production. I mean, I have a projecting enough voice. I don't do that. It is what it is. If I ever hit the big time, I'll have a producer. I'll be like, get in there, producer. But what I wanted to mention is that this is very interesting. Parker, the guy who does one of the studies, says, it's interesting because some studies, this is huge as to the way to look at regular studies too. Remember the episodes I have with Peter McCullough and Robert Malone and the like, and different people who were on Joe Rogan talking about these issues with the way Big Pharma does these studies, like dropping people out of the study after it turns out that you are close to statistical significance for a certain side effect, and they had one of those side effects. So if you selectively drop out people from the study, then it's no longer statistically significant, it's just close. So these types of things, this is another one. I had not thought about this before. This is crazy. Some studies made what Parker describes as a statistical mistake, controlling for factors like genetic predisposition that exacerbate the effects of Tylenol as a confounding variables. Hello? The question is whether or not across the entire population, there's a statistical problem, statistically significant problem with taking taking Tylenol by pregnant mothers. So you're going to say, you're going to go find the people who are most susceptible to the very risk you're studying? And you're going to say, well, we're going to control for those. Well, then your study isn't about versus the general population anymore. Have you warned the people that have a genetic predisposition? No, your warning's not a general predisposition. So why would you take it out of the study? That's insane to me. But what this is saying, that there are studies that did that. I'm going to repeat again. Parker says some studies controlled for factors like genetic predisposition that exacerbate the effects of Tylenol. It's, he says, it's like saying, he or she, I think it was a he. It's like saying kids playing with matches are perfectly safe when there's not anything flammable around. And like I said, I go the opposite. I just say, okay, if it's more likely for any number of reasons that I get this, the point is, if you're a factor of me getting to it, if I take it in the regular dose, but we're talking about the population, does whether or not I am more predisposed to it have anything to do with it? With if people, me and people like me, add to the statistical significance across the broad population group, you don't get to chop out some slice of the broad population group that would bring you to statistical significance and say it's associated. Absolutely insane. Then we say that Parker did connect the genetic and environmental variables with acetaminophen, bringing the probable association between acetaminophen and autism into clear focus in 2017. So, some of these studies, the role of oxidative stress, inflammation, and acetaminophen exposure from birth to early childhood in the induction of autism. So this is the William Parker et al. I don't know the abbreviations of these journals. It's J-INT Med RES, 2017 April. Here's a review, 2018. Prenatal paracetamol, that's the other term for acetaminophen, P-A-R-A-C-E-T-A-M-O-L, exposure and child neurodevelopment, a review, 2018 May. Conclusions, I believe, for this one, because I try to go in order. Together, these 9 studies suggest an increased risk of adverse neurodevelopmental outcomes following prenatal APAP exposure, which is another abbreviation. Remember what they do is they use terms to hide. Now, you'd think they wouldn't in the thing that says we believe there's an association, but what they do is build in this language that is hard for us to piece together. In doing so, they come up with new abbreviations all the time. They call things 5 different names, none of which are related to what we commonly refer to them as. So nonetheless, APAP is that. It is what they said is paracetamol. I'm not sure I'm pronouncing in emphasis that right. So again, then, conclusions. Together, these 9 studies suggest an increased risk of adverse neurodevelopmental outcomes following prenatal APAP exposure. Further studies are urgently needed with precise indication of use and exposure assessment of use both in utero and in early life. Given the current findings, pregnant women should be cautioned against indiscriminate use of APAP. These results have substantial public health implications. And that was, again, from 2018. And what did RFK Jr., what's really the conclusion based on that? I didn't say don't take it. I said don't take it indiscriminately. But he's just, just pulling shit out of his ass. Indiscriminate use of APAP, which is acetaminophen, which is Tylenol. Next study, 2016. In the article, Autism, I don't know what RES is, but it's going to be some kind of autism review. That's literally a dedicated article. September 2016, Autism, or rather, a dedicated journal. 2016, September, Zayin Liu et al. Maternal use of acetaminophen during pregnancy and risk of autism spectrum disorders in childhood. A Danish national birth cohort study. The thing I was just talking about, here's another thing. Why can't you just say autism spectrum disorders? You said it in the title. No, they shorten that down to ASD, which most of you and I wouldn't know. So we got, if somebody quoted it, it brings down the risk of people actually understanding it. Or if you're trying to read it, but then you get a little bit lost, and all of a sudden it says ASD in the middle of the study instead of autism. This is a we followed 64,322 children and mothers enrolled in the Danish National Birth Cohort, 1996 through 2002. For an average of 12.7 years to investigate whether acetaminophen use in pregnancy is associated with increased risk of ASD in the offspring. So to sound like this is just some brand new bullshit with no history is just so disingenuous as to need to be punched in the fucking face. This is a study that was published in 2016, so almost 9 years ago, that they followed these people for 12.7 years. Again, then continuing to investigate whether acetaminophen use in pregnancy is associated with increased risk of, like I said, ASD. You're like, hey, what? So is that the answer then? What's ASD? Are we to our conclusion, or is this something intermediate? Autism spectrum disorder. So again, then, is to investigate whether acetaminophen use in pregnancy is associated with increased risk of ASD in the offspring. Information on acetaminophen use was collected prospectively from 3 computer-assisted telephone interviews. We used records from the Danish hospitals and psychiatric registries to identify diagnoses of ASD. At the end of follow-up, 1,027, 1.6%, children were diagnosed with ASD. 345, 0.5%, with infantile autism. We found that 31% of ASD, autism spectrum disorder, 26% of infantile autism have also been diagnosed with hyperkinetic disorders. So that's just, you know, slicing the pie up there, splitting up, just so you understand. More than 50% women reported ever using acetaminophen in pregnancy. We use Cox proportional hazards model to estimate hazard ratio and 95% confident interval. So this is where I say they are intending to get the statistical significance. Now, again, I'm not the guy who's in journal articles all the time, but the typical confidence interval for statistical significance is at 95% confidence interval. That's what they're referring to there. They are saying they're estimating it, but to me, they're saying to the best that we can, we're measuring it. Then they see prenatal use of acetaminophen was associated with. So to me, that's their estimated, we hit 95% confident interval, was associated with an increased risk of ASD, autism spectrum disorder, accompanied by hyperkinetic symptoms, but not with other ASD causes. Maternal use of acetaminophen in pregnancy. Oh, I'm sorry. I already said that part. Well, I guess it's repeated. In pregnancy was associated with ASD with hyperkinetic symptoms only, suggesting acetaminophen exposure early in fetal life may specifically impact this hyperactive behavioral phenotype. As if that's not bad enough. Hyperkinetic symptoms. Here's another one. 23 September 2021, this is the call to action. Paracetamol use during pregnancy, a call for precautionary action. Also known as I said, bully pulpit. Almost 4 years to the date. In fact, it may have been 4 years to the date. May have been 4 years and 1 day to the date. 23 September 2021 of since here, almost 4 years to the date before the RFK announcement. Paracetamol use during pregnancy, a call for precautionary action. Nature Reviews Endocrinology. And the abstract, I talk about acetaminophen. It's an active ingredient, more than 600 medications, blah, blah, blah. It's shortened as APAP. I told you, man. Increasing experimental and epidemiological research suggests that prenatal exposure to APAP might alter fetal development, which could increase the risk of some neurodevelopmental, reproductive, and urogenital disorders. blah, 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 blah. We recommend that pregnant women should be cautioned at the beginning of pregnancy to, colon, forego APAP unless its use is medically indicated. Why are they saying that? Because the thing I fucking told you, to use a scientific term, they're saying that because, yeah, you can say that pain relief and you know, they only have so many options, but you're weighing against that whether or not a child has a lifetime neurological deficit and other lifetime, you know, chronic problems, whether or not their health costs are a hundredfold, if not a thousandfold, as children, as the average population, and throughout their lifetime, a massive amount of money. Whether or not they are going to be able to be independent and productive members of society. Oh, that's on one side of the scale. And over here is, well, they should be allowed that pain relief. And so they say, very specifically understanding that, unless its use is medically indicated. Second one, what they recommend as far as what pregnant women should be cautioned at the beginning of pregnancy. Consult with a physician or pharmacist if they are uncertain whether use is indicated and before using on a long-term basis. And minimize exposure by using the lowest effective dose for the shortest possible time. Also known as what RFK was lambasted as having his head up his ass, said, exactly. We suggest specific actions to implement these recommendations. It reflects, this consensus statement reflects our concerns and is currently supported by 91 scientists, clinicians, and public health professionals from across the globe. Last one, July 2022. Maternal acetaminophen use and cognitive development at 4 years, the Ontario birth study. Now, I actually don't know what the results of that are. I'll just give that to you. It's just that it was a related article based on that last article. So, 7 July 2022, maternal acetaminophen use and cognitive development at 4 years, the Ontario birth study. Depending on how it's built, it may not say that much. Now, remember, however, then that, again, the episode first covered that, I'm sorry, the journal article first covered that was more the basis of the announcement because it was recently. What it did was look at something like 46 different studies, and then it said, let's look at the quality of these studies. You know, looking at, you know, how well they were disciplined and how they sliced and diced their data and what they did with their participants and so on and the conclusions they drew, whether or not this is most scientific. And the higher quality studies, looking at these in different ways to categorize them by quality, were the ones that were more likely to find the association. So remembering that, we know that there are a lot of shit studies. We said it many, many, many times. So yeah, guys, it's big and it's true. Just thought I would pass that on because, you know, when the bloodhound catches a sniff, a lot of times he's on it for a while. And it's good to put those down in record. So don't say I didn't warn you. Now remember, a year from now, I'll be like, man, I know there was that association, but I didn't commit it to memory. And the association is strong. And the other thing, too, is that aren't we in a better world right now? Aren't we? But even when we weren't, I was telling you this type of stuff. Not trying to pat myself on the back, but I can use it today. It's been a rough week, rough 5 months. So I'm going to go ahead and pat myself on the back, whether I, quote, intended to or not. How you like them apples? Okay, guys, thanks for listening to the Scales of Truth. I'm Tyson Harley.